What's up, everybody? We got another episode, episode 65. We're up there already with Garrett Sapstead. So I hope I didn't mess his last name out. Actually, before we started the podcast, that's what I asked him first. Was just saying, how do we say your last name, man? So Garrett's actually a strength and conditioning coach from the UK. And he's written, he's mostly known through the Fitness Maverick. He's an author of several books, but I got to know him because of all the articles he's been writing for Breaking a Muscle and mostly T-Nation. So for those who don't know what T-Nation is, it's a strength and fitness website where a lot of articles are what many experts write down, and they have good resources on there. And he kind of stood out of the stuff he wrote. So that's when I started following him. And we've been talking for a while now and finally got together and made up a podcast. And just so you know, he's also a coffee geek like myself. So we got that little connection right there. And he also has a bunch of tasty, popular protein pancake and waffles on his website. So you guys should go and check that out and after the podcast and make yourself some new stuff. And before we start, I kind of wanted to do a special mention, a special dedication. Since the last podcast, actually, in the past week, we've had our first and foremost, we just passed the 15,000 downloads. So honestly, I never even ever thought that starting the Smith Vibes podcast would give me the opportunity to meet so many people and get so many messages from other people that said they were inspired and motivated by them and all the good vibes around it. So I really appreciated everybody on that came on the podcast and the love that they shared after we've done them. And I really feel that we were able to give some points of valuable to everybody. And I know numbers are their numbers, but they will still be there, and it helps us as small businesses like Smith Coaching, the strength in our online programming system, to just keep going on and get us known. And anyways, I just wanted to thank you all. And if you ever know anybody that you think that would fit on really well on the podcast, or even yourself, if you want to participate, just head down on the website of Smith Coaching, teamsmithcoaching.com. I'll put the link down below. You guys can fill out a little form. It'll take you 20 seconds, and I'll get in touch with you or get in touch with the person you'd like me to interview. And that'd be great. So without further ado, let's do this, Garrett.
Check this out. New name alert.
It's the Smith Vibes podcast. So I bet you're not gonna enjoying coffee with me then.
Not quite. No, just had squeeze a lemon in some water, and that's it. So yeah, that's it. It's in the evening, trying to limit the caffeine after midday. But I'm a bit of a coffee junkie, so that doesn't always work out.
I just got this fancy Chemex, so I'm like testing all these coffees. It's crazy. Just wait, so much time.
Is that cold brew?
No, this is just pour over.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so like you put your coffee grounds in the top, and you just kind of slow. It's like a slow pour. Okay.
In four steps.
Right.
Yeah. So
I don't think I'm quite there yet.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Yeah. Why don't we do a little, actually make a proper introduction, who you are. I actually don't know how to spell your last name properly. I don't want to mess it up.
No one does. Sapstead.
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 Oh, Sapstead. Huh. From the UK, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's Anglo-Saxon or something like that. I don't know. Nobody knows how to spell it, so I wouldn't worry.
All right. So why don't you give us your own little intro? Who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, so I'm basically a strength and conditioning coach, fitness coach. I come from more of a strength and conditioning background, and that's kind of my formal education. I suppose working with a lot of youth athletes when I was doing internships and things like that growing up. And then at the same time, I kind of worked as a personal trainer in big box gyms, and private gyms, and you name it, really, you know, the mobile stuff and things. And just gradually throughout the years, I've probably gone more down the general population route, because actually they're the people that I decided I enjoyed training the most, really. So I stopped at a certain point. You know, I was training pro soccer players, you know, pro rugby players, things like that. And actually I enjoyed training the housewife, the, you know, the CEO. You know, I enjoyed training those people more. And I think especially with those people, you have to be a little bit more adaptable. You have to be a little bit more creative sometimes. You don't know what's going to turn up some days. So, you know, versus athletes, you're kind of predicting an outcome, really. You're training them for a certain purpose. So I think when it comes to your mainstream population, I say it's something I kind of flourished in a little bit more, and being the creative person that I am, allowed me to kind of make the most of those skills, really, and help them overcome certain barriers and obstacles that they had, really. So yeah, long story short, I'm a bit of a jack of all trades, really, which some would say master of none, but you know.
That's awesome. I really like that you mentioned that, because and sometimes with general population, well, I find that they tend to more stick to the plan and go through a better proper periodization, if you could call it that way, through a year, because they're never really stopping.
Absolutely. Yeah, as I said, when you train general population people, you've got to be a little bit more adaptable, really. You know, you could have the best plan down on paper for them, but then if they step in one day and they've had a crap day at the office, or, you know, they've had a really poor night's sleep or whatever, and they don't feel like training, well, you've got to change it, really. You've got to mix it up. You've got to keep it fun for them. Their goal isn't necessarily to improve speed, strength, power, etc., and all that thing, all those sort of things. Their goal might be to play football with their kids, to look better than their mates with their top off. You know, for the next holiday to Bali to look like they're the best on the beach. You know, it's one of those things, really. As I said, that's kind of the population that I enjoyed training the most, and I've just kind of stuck to it now, really. I've got the odd athlete. I train a really high level triathlete at the moment. A few of my online clients are actually strength and conditioning coaches themselves. So really, as I said, I'm kind of a jack of all trades, really. I'm a marketer's nightmare. I think I've said that before on another podcast, but you know, I think you're told as a trainer, especially when it comes to online marketing, to niche down into a certain area and to market to a certain population. But I'm a bit of everything, and kind of that's who I am, really.
I really enjoy the fact that I kind of found you a couple of months ago, actually, through obviously social media, everything, all the articles out there, and I kind of feel that there's a really nice growth of strength and conditioning coaches from the UK, actually. I've been seeing a tendency to have a very high quality of content and valuable expressions of everything you guys get out. And I can name a bunch of names, but just to keep it short, I mean, it's pretty cool to see, like, the articles that you're writing, actually, for T Nation. I've been looking at it, and I mean, like, being able nowadays to write an article and have the imagination of actually writing it in a different way when everything kind of is already out there,
and inspire people a different way is awesome, man. Like, congratulations with that. How did you kind of get into that? How do you like get into that mindset? Okay, I'm going to write something for T-Nation. I'm going to write something for the population. It could be for athletes or for the general population. But how do you like kind of get into that set of mind? Okay, like how am I going to do it differently now?
I'm just someone that writes about what I like writing about, really. I'm just really lucky that anything I send over to T-Nation, they like it, because, you know, I'm not afraid to kind of speak my mind. I'm not afraid to do things that are a little bit different or a little bit more forward thinking when I'm writing about stuff. And as you know, as a T-Nation reader yourself, T-Nation are a little bit kind of out there, a little bit in front of things. Mm-hmm. You know, they were speaking about things 10 years ago that there's research coming on out at the moment that's just confirming some of their things. You know, I think I remember reading an article probably in about 2005 or something from probably, I think it was Joe DeFranco, talking about sled pushes and weighted sled pushes and all things like that. And that's only stuff really in the last 5-10 years that started to come out. And only in the last 5 years has there been a paper to confirm that those things are effective. You know, so I think T-Nation is really one of those things that for me really, really suits that forward thinking mentality. And because I grew up myself reading it, I think I tend to understand them quite well and what they want and what they're looking for. So, you know, I tend to write in a way that appeals to them, because that's the way I've kind of grown up, really. You know, I write for a lot of other places too, but with T-Nation, they just kind of allow you to express yourself a little bit more and really to kind of write about what's what might not be currently out there. So, you know, just yesterday, I ran an article for them, pinged it across this morning to Chris Sugar about just banded kettlebell swings. And, you know, banded kettlebell swings have been out for a long time and you see videos everywhere, but I wrote it just with a slightly different take on it and found a research paper that basically showed a 1700% increase in growth hormone levels from doing 12 minutes of kettlebell swings. So I took that swing on the article and focused on that and how it can kind of augment growth hormone levels rather than what other people might be writing about with banded kettlebell swings. So as I said, it's just kind of knowing what they want and what kind of appeals to people. And just writing about that, really. And I said, I'm just lucky that T-Nation like my stuff, really.
Yeah, you're right though. Like, I mean, Joe DeFranco and Christian Thibodeau were kind of the first ones to stand out back in the days, writing these things that weren't really out.
100%. Yeah, as you say, a lot of things get recycled. You know, and there are also many ways to skin a cat, really. So, you know, you might find an article from one T-Nation coach talking about one thing, and then another talking about the exact same thing, but they'll have a completely different swing on that article. They'll write in a completely different way. One will write in a little bit more of a, I don't know, some people can write as though they're straight out of college writing a paper or something. And then someone else like me will, you know, I did college years ago, I can write like that. But if I write like that, you're not going to listen. So I try and put swings on that and write that article as though I'm actually talking to you and putting that information across in a way that you can understand and hear as well. I don't need to try and sound smart. I'm not trying to prove something, you know.
Yeah.
I think some people can write almost trying to overprove something. Whereas, brutally honestly, I don't give a shit. You know, I'll put that information across in a way that I think you'll understand, and in a way that I think you'll that'll hopefully entertain. So I'll get the science across, but as I said, you want to keep reading it, hopefully.
Yeah, and that way you stay way more authentic as well.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, my younger brother's a personal trainer, and he doesn't struggle with an online presence. He's just growing his online presence, and he doesn't really write articles and things like that, but he's trying to grow his social media presence. And when he first started writing, he was all being sort of proper and posh and, you know, writing taglines that were very kind of very, very proper and kind of put together. And I basically just said to him, like, look, that is not you. You're the F in this, yeah, S in that, C that, C that, you know, that's you. Just literally just, some people won't like that, but that is just you. Writers, that's you. Because otherwise, at some point, people are just going to kind of, going to understand that isn't you, and they're going to see through everything. So you just need to be you. And if people don't like it, they don't like it.
Yeah, and that way later on the line, you're kind of not stuck with these kind of clients that aren't like you, and through your actual presence, which it wasn't the presence you wanted to show at the beginning, maybe.
100%, yeah. That's it. It all boils down to the client at the end of the day. You know, what type of clients are you trying to find? With me, a lot of my clients understand me, and you know, I kind of banter back and forth with a lot of my online clients, and they understand my sense of humor, and I understand them, and that's because I've attracted, I suppose, the right person. Whereas if you're, I don't know, if I'm trying to write as though I'm talking to a middle-aged woman, then that's who I'm going to gather more as a client. And maybe not be able to talk to them quite so well, and therefore won't be able to maintain them as a client so well. You know, you've literally just got to be you and be as authentic as you possibly can. And yeah, you're going to have people that don't like you, but you're not after everyone liking you, just after a small percentage of people liking you. And if you can create that relationship with your clients, then they're more likely to stick to the process and stick to the program. And that's what it's at the end of that's what it's about at the end of the day. Is them sticking to the program and the plan you set out for them, and you know, getting the end result. And so a lot about that's about the relationship, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I get that. Like I send daily emails to, well, whoever is like on my mailing list, and sometimes I'll get emails like, I'm unscribing because I don't like your tone, and I don't like the way you say this, and you don't talk about training enough, and blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes I get other emails like, I really like what you're doing. Can I hire you? And then exactly. You're just like, okay. Might as well be yourself.
That's it. You literally got to be yourself. If people unsubscribe, they unsubscribe. I have people unsubscribe all the time from my mailing list. Hmm. It's just what happens, you know. But then the people that you do have subscribe are the people that that are more, I suppose, your tribe. I know it sounds cliche, but they're the people that are more likely to listen to you and follow along and do what they're told, because they've got trust in you.
As long as you're not a tiger tribe, you're fine.
Yeah, 100%.
Have you seen that?
don't ruin it, though. Don't ruin it, because I've still got the last episode to watch.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, you probably know what's going to happen, but yeah, it's crazy.
I know what's happening, yeah.
I'm glad that you have this t-shirt on, because I wanted to get into this kind of debate with you.
okay,
I know that you're not a big fan of the burpee. And I kind of want to have your take on this, because to be honest, like, I use it, and I have used it, and I have used it in the past, maybe too much, and have seen very bad things happen, like to my wrists and stuff like that, back in when I was doing a little bit more CrossFit. And it was a simple movement to do. And I have seen cons about it, like low back pain, wrist pain, shoulder pain, stuff like that, as like an excess of doing them, not being ready enough, like, for doing it at a certain volume. But I know that you don't like it at all. Give me all of it.
I got you. Yeah. So there's a number of reasons, really. And I'll start out by saying I'm not 100% against it. I don't think it's the worst exercise in the world. But I do think there are many, many better alternatives that will create the same, if not better, result than a burpee, given any situation, that aren't anywhere near as stressful or horrible, basically. So, you know, it's one of those things. I think today an article released in T-Nation where it includes a burpee that I put on there, and I just called it a better burpee.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just called it a better burpee, and it was literally just doing a burpee with your hands on a foam roller. So basically, when you prop yourself up to the foam roller, i.e. So for people that are just listening, you're in a push-up position with your hands on the foam roller. When you jump up, your knees are coming wide outside the foam roller. So your lumbar is in less flexion. Your hips are kind of less into a flex position. And you're almost starting from that squat position. So from there, you can, I don't know, you can jump up, you can go, you can step yourself back, whatever. It doesn't really matter what you want to do, but just that slight elevation limits that rounded position. So as I said, I'm not 100% against a burpee. I just think there are much better options. I think there are a few things I don't like about the burpee. The main one being that the excessive lumbar flexion. You know, we're not, when we're taught to, for example, pick up a box, we're not taught to pick up a box like that. Now, I'm not against lumbar flexion. There's a lot of evidence out there that kind of refutes the original research by McGill that said lumbar flexion is bad. A lot of people for the last 10, 15 years cited the, I think there's a, it was a study involving a pig spine, which was basically a dried up pig spine. 10,000 flexions of the dried up pig spine, and it caused a disc herniation. And everyone repeated that study or cited that study and basically said 10,000 flexions of your spine, it's bad, you'll get some kind of disc herniation from it. That stuff's all been refuted anyway in the past. So I'm not against spinal flexion. I just don't like it as a repeated pattern necessarily from a learning a pattern perspective. And as I said, I think there are a lot better options than an actual burpee itself. The second reason I don't like a burpee is probably actually how it's programmed and why it's programmed. So I'm a big fan of justification. Every exercise, every set, every rep, a trainer must be able to justify why they're giving that to their clients. A lot of trainers, when they're giving their clients a burpee, there's no justification behind it apart from it's hard. So there's one thing I don't like about it. It's that lack of justification of it. If you can justify it for your client, absolutely fine. No problem. I've got no problem with that at all. But then again, the other another reason why I don't like it is said the use of it and the fact that it's thrown into things like WODs, where there's not necessarily any thought for technique, and it's just repetition, and it's hard. Now that's great for something like mental development and really pushing yourself and getting a good buzz out of it. But from a physical development perspective, I think there are better alternatives, more joint friendly alternatives to it.
There's recently, and you're right. And I think that, well, in my opinion, being able to like doing multiple burpees, like having the requirements of strength and endurance of like just the push-up itself is more important before even achieving that, right?
100%, yeah.
And there's this guy in actually our in our state, he just beat the world record of the most burpees in a certain amount of time. I don't even know how much it is, but it was like thousands of reps. And each single of his burpees were like perfect. They were pretty much like a push-up every time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously it was hard, but like the guy was trained to do it. The guy was muscular. He wasn't just an endurance freak. He was like actually built to like be able to do that many push-ups because he was like really controlling it, right? So like obviously it is a lot of reps, but I mean, he would have probably not been able to do the record if he wasn't doing it properly and with a good amount of technique.
For someone like that, they're going to get a heck of a lot more out of it because their body's a lot better built for it. And they practice it and they've got those foundations to be able to do it as well. Same with CrossFit athletes. I see, you know, CrossFit is a sport. If burpees are part of that sport, then you should be able to perform a kick-ass burpee. So it's one of those things. But for your general population client, for your athletic client, for someone that wants to get in shape, say, you know, just from a physique standpoint, then I just think there are better, more joint-friendly options. I'll give another example. So I just went for a run. We just discussed, you know, before recording this, that I just got back from a quick run. You know, I'm not someone that runs a lot. But I'm trying to get my step count up. I'm just trying to burn a few calories. Obviously, it's a difficult time at the moment. I'm lucky enough that I've got a garage gym where I've got some weights and stuff in there. But throwing in 3 or 4 runs during the week for me actually is about right. If I throw in any more than that, actually my joints feel a little bit niggly. My knees aren't the best. My ankles aren't the best. So any other conditioning sessions that I have to do tend to be really kind of joint friendly, really low impact. Yesterday I was just doing some like timed kettlebell swings and things like that. So, you know, running is one of those things that even for some people, it might not be that good for them. Everything's okay in moderation, mm-hmm. but doing too much of one thing can be a bad thing for some people. As I said, I'm not completely against burpees. I think for most people, there are better alternatives.
I wasn't expecting this. I thought we would be having a bigger debate. I'm glad we got this. But
I don't think there is such thing as a bad exercise. When I was a young trainer, you could easily walk around in gyms and look at other personal trainers and be like, oh, they're giving them some shit workout. What are they doing with them? But the reality is you don't know that client. You don't know whether that trainer is giving someone a workout just because what they're giving them is the only thing that they'll do, you know? So you really can't judge someone. And everyone is, again, I know it sounds cliche, but everyone is completely different. Sometimes there are people that just enjoy burpees. So you might give them a burpee because they enjoy it and they're a little bit sadistic. So I'm not against it. But if I have the choice, then I might choose something a little bit simpler. For some people, it might be as simple as a mountain climber with some sliders. It might be some kettlebell swings, something like that, you know, jump rope. It doesn't really matter. It depends on the person. But as I said, I'm not completely against them. It's just not something I would program if I had the choice. I'm also a fan of kind of, I call it the 80-20 method. 80% of what I want to give the client, 20% of what they want.
Really?
Make them think that they've got control over the workout a little bit. They don't really. They think they've got kind of 20% control. But I let them have a little bit of input within it as well. You know, a little bit of beach stuff at the end. Do they want to do a little bit more guns at the end, etc.? Mm-hmm. So, you know, and if someone said to me, I want to do burpees, then okay, fine. But maybe we kind of adapt it a little bit according to what's best for you, really. But no, I think we kind of see eye to eye on this. There's no massive debate, really. So I think it depends on what people you're around as well.
Yeah, I have a mate at the gym. He does that. He gives biceps and triceps to his hockey kids just because they just love it. And like every time they're just like, that's why they come in to train the whole hour. Right.
I used to train a football academies, quite high level football academy players. And you give them a leg session and they wouldn't want to do it. But if you gave them an arm session, then absolutely they'd be at it. They'd be, you know, with their sleeves on, rolling up their sleeves, looking in the mirror, doing their concentration curls. So you know, it's one of those things, you know, if you give them a lunge to do, they're asking, well, how does this affect my football? Well, you're fine doing a bicep curl, yet you're asking it why you should lunge, you know, just basic things like that, really.
I've actually, when I had that kind of outcome after I saw your lumberjack squat, when I started programming those, people weren't seeing it as a squat as much. And they were enjoying it a little bit more because they didn't see like a bar in their back or a dumbbell in their arm. They were just like seeing it as something completely different.
Absolutely. Yeah. You change someone's mindset. As soon as there's something about a bar and a rack, isn't there? Bar in a rack in front of you, some plates on the outside, and it's a little bit scary, you know, whereas you've got a landmine set up there and the landmine's propped up on the bench to a nice height. It's easy for you to get into. If you fail, well, you fail. You just drop it on the bench. You know, it's especially for your general population.
But it's so hard.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard.
It's so hard. It's like probably one of the hardest squats I've done in the past year. Honestly, like the burn, the consistency on the technique that's not breaking down makes you like be able to do so many more reps. I mean, it is so hard.
Absolutely. And the good slash bad thing about it as well is that it's too easy to do some intensity methods on there. It's too easy to do some drop sets, some rest pauses, some extended sets and things like that. So you're kind of egged on by the exercise to kind of do more. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like when you were talking a little earlier about your brother and also about like new trainers in a gym when you see them walking around. So one thing that like in the past that I would like criticize on like the quality of the trainings that other trainers were doing, but the intention of any personal trainer, like what I realized in the after time is that nobody is training people to make them injured, right? They just don't know yet that there's something better for them, maybe along the line. Now that what's going on in our world and with like more of the virtual reality that we might need to adapt, how do you think that can affect the new personal trainers that won't have as much time on the floor?
I discussed this in another podcast actually last month. Yeah. Well, not quite, but just talking about the fact that the online personal trainer industry is obviously getting really big now. And I think what's happened has with COVID-19 has forced the online personal training world to kind of accelerate by 5 or 10 years. It's forcing your new personal trainers, your old personal trainers, your people that are still learning to be personal trainers to adopt a more online route to things. In the past 2 weeks, I've seen trainers that weren't offering any services whatsoever to now be offering online training, or what I see as kind of the meat in the middle of Zoom personal training sessions. So, and I don't know how that works, to be honest, but I don't know. I would sit here and you would be exercising on your couch and I would be talking to you and well done, keep going, 10 more reps, and charging you $60 to do that or something. But I completely get it. I completely understand why that's happening. Personal trainers that are used to that gym environment, they've suddenly overnight lost all of their income, and they don't have any kind of passive revenue. They have no, you know, they have no way to pay their bills. So to be able to train their clients online or via kind of a Skype or Zoom route, I get it. But I think that's a kind of a temporary solution. As far as actual true online training goes, I've actually, and this is what I did discuss in another podcast, is how, fake isn't the word, there are a lot of people out there advertising for you, I, anyone else to become a six-figure online personal trainer overnight with their secret method, whatever. All I have to do is pay them, I don't know, a few thousand dollars, and they'll basically send me some kind of system to follow. Now, I've done a few of these courses.
And which I've one?
Ooh. I'll name one. I did one called TribeFit. And TribeFit are an Australian one. TribeFit were the original people that helped. Trying to think who they helped now. There are a few really well online trainers that they basically helped. And Sky, I don't know whether you know Emily Sky. She's Australian. I think she's from the Gold Coast. She's kind of a female pregnancy kind of thing. And they helped her and a few other people. So I did their course and it was a few thousand Australian dollars. I think probably about, I don't know, 1200 US dollars, something like that. And you're basically given an online system to follow. And you follow the steps, follow the webinars, do it step by step. And they give you a few phone calls after every few weeks after you've kind of followed a process, which is absolutely fine. And I followed the process. And by the way, at that point, I was already online training. I was doing it quite successfully. I was doing it quite well. But I thought, okay, there's all these companies advertising these things. Do they know something that I don't? What can I learn off of them? What systems do they use that I don't use? What might I be able to learn? And, you know, $1,200 is pretty cheap if they're going to, if they're promising you a return on investment on it. So at that point, I was already making enough money to support myself fully with just online training alone. So I did that course. And long story short, at the end of the course, they asked me to make a video. And the video was a testimonial for them. And I said, long story short, manipulating the stats in how they helped me, I basically said on the video, which wasn't actually a lie, that they turned me into a six-figure personal trainer. Now, it wasn't technically a lie, but that was then a video that they then promoted out there to say that you too can become a six-figure personal trainer. Gareth moved to Australia, and then he did this online personal training course with us, and then became a six-figure personal trainer, blah, blah, blah. I saw from the inside exactly how things were slightly manipulated, not to be incorrect, but to sound as though they were responsible for making you into a six-figure personal trainer.
Yes.
It's one of those things. I'm glad I did that course, and I don't really have a bad thing to say about it. You know, I completely understand how they themselves market and they are a business in themselves. And I do believe that they would help you transition into an online trainer. But I think what a lot of trainers perceive as being the life of an online trainer, and that it's going to make you a six-figure trainer or something, is a complete lie. You know, I in effect turned my 50 odd hours a week of one-to-one training and being active 40 to 50 on average every week for 10 plus years into, for the last 4 or 5 years, doing basically a desk job, you know. And that's not a desk job, me living the life sat around a pool in Bali or Dubai or something like that. That's me sat on my laptop in a room at my office desk programming exercises for someone that I've never met, you know. And as much as I love my online trainers, I enjoy the one-to-one interaction a lot more because I can see what's going on. I can see how my clients improve and progress and things like that. Whereas actually what I'm doing now is I'm seeing how people's bodies are changing by pictures. I'm seeing their workout statistics. I use Trainerize. So I see their stats, their logging, you know, their RPs and their workouts and things like that. But I'm not actually hands-on with those people. So, you know, I'm fully on board with trainers becoming online trainers if that's what they want to do, as long as they understand exactly what it is. And as long as they don't kind of add to the problem really of advertising unrealistic results for their clients as well, really.
Well, it's like if there's two parts to this, like this, these kind of courses that actually help you, then that become valuable, and you kind of take bits and bits and make it to your own kind of training and personal business. I mean, to me, it takes a minimum of years of experience and of like actually working hands-on with people and online with people, and kind of like struggle through like what works and what doesn't, because you'll see these people that haven't done anything, and then they sign up for this like six-figure course, and they're kind of like, in my opinion, lied to, because they're expecting that this is going to be happening overnight, and they don't have the same knowledge as, like, it's like if you go to a course, like a strength and conditioning coach course. I've been to Cressy Performance and learned a bunch of stuff, and what was great is like I probably the person beside me that had like maybe 4 or 5 years less of experience didn't learn the same things.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad because, like, these courses, like you're telling, they're selling a dream that's maybe not even possible.
100%. Yeah, as you said, you talk about strength and conditioning courses. And, well, with any course where you're learning the trade, strength and conditioning, personal training type courses, and the various bolt-ons and certifications that you can do, really, nobody's there ever really teaching business-based principles, business and marketing-based principles. So that's where I see these online trainer courses helping, in that actually they're really the only opportunity for a lot of us as trainers, as coaches, to learn some really basic marketing tactics.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Isn't it? That's what it is. Yeah. And some of what I learned on some of those courses, I do still use. They're very, very, very basic principles.
It's just how to nurture the people that you coach.
100%. That's it. Yeah. How to talk to the right person and things like that. You come out of college thinking you know everything, and then the next year you realize that you didn't know everything, and then now you know everything, and then the next year you realize you don't know anything. It's a constant thing, and I'm one of those people that, you know, I just want to know more and know more and learn more constantly. You know, you really can't ever become a master of anything, and I'm just constantly striving for knowledge. So, you know, doing business courses and things like that are me trying to fill in the gaps that I have within my knowledge base, really. You know, there are far more educated coaches out there, a lot more smarter coaches out there, there are more experienced coaches out there. But a lot of those coaches aren't even on social media. You wouldn't know about a lot of these coaches either.
Exactly.
Would you? Whereas, you know, just taking some marketing courses, reading some marketing books, just help you get in front of people that might understand you a little bit more, might help you to, I don't know, write for T Nation, where millions of people might be reading your stuff, you know?
Did you find that doing this course that you like, or one of these courses that you've done, that like they weren't as much focused as what the client is actually getting as results, as more as they were just caring about the money that you were making out of doing this?
There was zero focus on that.
Mm.
I can probably stream off exactly how the course went and exactly what they told you to do in a couple of minutes if you want to hear it.
Why not?
I can explain to you the complete system. So, FYI, I don't use the system anymore. I suppose I've adapted certain things to suit me better. But the simple approach is they will teach you how to make a landing page. That's one of the first things they'll do, is teach you how to make a landing page and what to use. Okay. Some good ones. Instapage is a very, very good one to use for anyone listening that wants to use anything. So they'll teach you how to make a very good landing page, and they'll teach you how to write on that landing page. Sorry, actually, first they'll teach you or ask you what your ideal client is.
Mm.
So they'll ask you to describe and do some research into your ideal client, and then they'll ask you to write the landing page for that client. If you don't have any transformation pictures at that point, which if you're a new trainer, you won't have anyway. But if you're a current trainer, obviously you can put those up there. You can word those as though you've helped these people online. But if you...
I don't think I even have any, and I've been doing this for the past 10 years.
No, I didn't. But there are... I find them cheesy. I really do. I hate them. Anyone can do a transformation picture. They really can. There's so much rubbish out there. So I didn't have them. But I'll tell you a workaround in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So you create your landing pages first of all, and then what you do on your landing page is you put you use a service called Schedule Once, and Schedule Once basically is I'm not getting commission for these things by the way. Instapage, I have no affiliation with Instapage, no affiliation with Schedule Once, but feel free to chuck money my way. Schedule Once basically allows you to integrate on your landing page somewhere where after someone's clicked through to your landing page, just schedule a phone call with you. Once they've scheduled their phone call with you, the course will teach you how to talk on the phone call. So they'll tell you exactly what things to say. They'll tell you to write a script beforehand to ask the right questions and so on and so forth. And they will teach you exactly how to take the money up front for the online personal training that at this point, you don't know even how you're going to deliver that online personal training to that person. And that's basically the extent of the course. Once you get some clients, obviously you're sending people through to your landing pages. The way you're sending people through to your landing pages are initially, you might be sending it through to friends, Facebook groups are a big one. So really working Facebook groups, friending lots of people on Facebook and so on. Once you've done that, you actually offer a few clients some really low cost online personal training in exchange for them giving you some kind of transformation pictures. And obviously once you get to a certain point, then you can pick and choose which transformation pictures that you actually want to use based on people that have actually got a level of results. So just bear in mind up to this point, we haven't even spoken about how to deliver the online personal training to these people, because as I said, that's the extent of the course. Yeah. What happens after that is completely up to you. So whether you want to deliver your online personal training via, I don't know, I've known some trainers that have just sent some cookie cutter PDFs to people, or if you want to sign up to something like Trainerize or another one of the digital services that you can provide your online personal training to, that's completely up to you and how you want to do it really. But as I said, that's how to become an online personal trainer.
That's crazy. That's crazy. But who like kind of started all this? Like it must have like started small. Like, I mean, like there's so many of them out there. Like I see them all the time on my Facebook and I'm just like, sometimes I'm like unfollow or just like it's sponsored. So I just see it there and I'm just like, fuck, not this again. But I mean, like who like actually started, do you know like where's the origin of this?
Haven't got a clue. I know some of the earliest people that did online personal training with the likes of John Romanello. I think he was doing it like 20 years ago or something ridiculous. That, you know, obviously teenage writer himself. I think he owns a company now where he teaches people how to do copywriting and how to become good writers. But he was a former personal trainer that did very well for himself because he knew how to write and how to speak to people. And he was offering personal training online years and years and years ago before it was even spoken of, and I know he made a lot of money through it because he was one of the first and only people to do it. And he was trolling all kind of the online message boards and things like that. This is before social media kind of existed really, or before Facebook, you know, really was a big thing. But as far as the actual teaching you how to become an online trainer goes, have not got a clue, because most people that are teaching it weren't ever trainers themselves. So it completely baffles me how they can teach you how to become an online personal trainer and in theory get results with someone that could be 10,000 miles away when they've not actually been a personal trainer themselves. But I suppose as we said previously, they're kind of teaching you business principles. But I don't think that's necessarily good for your new personal trainer that doesn't know how to personal train, let alone, you know, the extra steps it takes to become a good marketer. You could be an excellent marketer and a really, really bad personal trainer, and you could probably make some money.
And I know, yeah, well, the script says everything. Having a script is, to me, like not being authentic and not being able to adapt to the person you're talking to.
100%. Yeah. The course I'm talking about in particular, they helped you develop a script, and it was really just about asking the right questions and listening basically. So in a way you're causing the person on the other end to answer the questions kind of for themselves and to talk themselves into actually doing it. And I remember at the same time as doing this script and going through this and preparing for phone calls, I was actually reading one of the Wolf of Wall Street books about how to be an effective communicator over the phone. So I was kind of before a phone call, getting myself in the mindset, you know, sell mindset. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, it worked, but it just wasn't making me feel good. It was making me feel more like I was a marketer than actually someone that was genuinely offering a service that would help someone. Now, you know, afterwards, you know, obviously, of course, I'm delivering the best service I possibly can, and my clients do get good results. But imagine if I was a trainer with zero experience whatsoever, and really good on the phone and really good at marketing myself and making online clients pay 6 months up front, you know, giving me four figures up front. That's crazy money to a lot of people. And then you're delivering them nothing. You're delivering them a cookie cutter PDF or something, which is absolutely mad in my books.
Yeah. I still think that the phone call is a good thing though, because you kind 100%. Of get in contact with the person. But I remember back in the days when, like in another life, where I was a salesman in a ski and bike shop, and we had shit bikes, we had shit skis, we had snowshoes, and we had really good ones, and we had of all of these. And every time we would have somebody come in, I would always be like trying to sell the top end kind of like model. And what's funny is like in all these sports companies, they really want you to know their product. So like if you're in the renter, they're going to bring you skiing. They're going to make you try all their skis so you know exactly how they feel. Same thing goes for the bikes. They'll bring you down in the trails and they'll make you test the bike. So when you're actually, and this is why like you know how it is. So when you get this client and he tells you what he wants and what he needs, you're there to like send him in the right direction. And if they don't want to take what you're recommending to them and they want the shit bike or the shit skis, well, they're going to end up with that. But you've been like 100% honest the whole time. But in the case of personal training, when you're talking to somebody on the phone or like one-on-one, I think that like you have to like be able to tell them like if you like for what they need, this is what they need. And if they're not ready to take that, you need to be honest enough and to tell them, well, maybe I'm not a good fit for you.
100%. I think you're exactly right there as well, in that, you know, this, you talk about the high level skis, you know that they're high level skis and you believe in that product. And when I'm talking over the phone to someone, I don't necessarily offer phone calls nowadays. I offer it if they want to as a consultation, but it's not a sale. It's just kind of a, you know, let's chat over the phone, let's have a consultation, etc. But I believe in my product and I genuinely believe that I can produce results for someone. And I know that exactly what I'm putting together for them and how I'm delivering it is the best I possibly can. And I know it's better than 99.999% of online trainers out there. So I know I'm going to be delivering them something that will work for them. So I believe in my product. But then you've also got some people that, well, they don't even have a product. So in theory, if I'm doing this online personal training course, I'm being shown how to sell a product that I don't even have yet. I'm being shown how to sell knowledge that I don't have. You know, I don't have the good skis. I don't even have the shit skis, do I?
It's kind of empty.
I've just got the chat.
It's an empty box.
Exactly that, yeah. And I've got to tell them that empty box is the best thing they've ever had, and if they don't have it, then they're going to be massively missing out, and they've got to give me some money up for it.
incredible. Let's I want to talk I don't want to take too much of your time either, but I mean, I wanted to talk about that that article you wrote about. We were talking about it a couple of weeks ago, the hamstring. The benefits of different models of hamstring movements.
Okay.
So So if I remember properly, the Nordics were the highest recruitment of the hamstrings, right?
Yeah. So I see, especially hamstrings and glutes, there's kind of two things you can, or two classifications of exercise, really. And especially with hamstrings and glutes, I see an exercise being as a stretcher, whatever you want to call that. It loads you most in a stretch position or a lengthened position.
Yeah.
And then you've got an activator or something that loads it most in a shortened position. Something like a Nordic hamstring curl, because your hips are in an extended position and your knees are in a flexed position, you're actually loading your hamstrings in their shortened position. Now, when you're loading something in a shortened position, you actually tend to get really high hamstring muscle activation anyway. Your EMG levels are pretty high anyway. So when you compare that to something like, for example, a stiff-legged deadlift, you're actually loading your hamstrings more because your knees are extended, your hips are flexed, you're loading your hamstrings more in a lengthened position. So actually, you're not going to get a high level of muscle activation anyway. But that deep stretch, you know, you and I both know that a stiff leg deadlift or an RDL or whatever is going to be a great hamstring exercise, but it's loading your hamstrings in a completely different way. And actually, you're going to get more mechanical trauma, more tissue damage through loading in that lengthened position than you are in a shortened position. So although a shortened position, you might get higher muscle activation, you're actually quite possibly activating more mechanisms in that lengthened position that will contribute to strength hypertrophy. Now, I'll give you another example. So to work the long headier tricep, we know that something like a French press overhead or like an overhead tricep extension is really good for the long head of your tricep. But actually, muscle activation of the long head of your tricep isn't that high when you're overhead. Your medial head, actually, activation is pretty high when you're overhead. But that's because you're working the long head of your tricep in its lengthened position because your arm's in a flexed position. So you're working it in a lengthened position and you're loading that long head in a lengthened position. And therefore, that's why you wake up the next day and your triceps are pretty messed up. But actually what causes the highest muscle activation in the long head of your tricep are things like kickbacks, where your shoulder's more in a, you know, basically by your sides and in a kickback type position. Yet we don't do those types of things, do we really? Those kickbacks, because they're kind of seen as prissy little exercises that you do with pink dumbbells. So I think the take home message really, you know, go back to your hamstrings, is that although something like a Nordic curl, and especially if you're loading that eccentrically, is going to be great as far as muscle activation goes, don't be afraid to load in a lengthened position as well, or to complement that with something that works in a lengthened position. So same with most other muscles that are kind of two joint muscles as well and cross two joints. You can really easily manipulate those to be loaded in both shortened and lengthened positions, really. Hamstrings being one of them.
I would be curious to kind of like see how difference the recovery would be between like doing glute ham raises or Nordics versus like Romanian deadlifts, stiff leg deadlifts, or any hip extension movement that requires hamstring like stretching. I mean, in my opinion, I found that all Romanian deadlifts, stiff leg deadlifts were like harder to recover from than Nordics, maybe because the hip extension of the movement is actually creating more fatigue and more damage.
Probably, yeah. And overall, you know, you got to remember it's a bigger exercise. You know, it's recruiting a lot more muscle mass. There's probably a bigger hormonal response, but a bigger stress response to that than in slightly a more isolated knee flexion based exercise like a Nordic curl. And yeah, you're in a Nordic curl, you probably are having less micro trauma, less tissue damage. You know, of course there are, you can overload them eccentrically as well, There are various ways to do them, and those are going to cause even more tissue damage. Because, as I said, you know, it's a good point. You've got to always question how far an exercise takes you into that kind of that fatigued state, and how long it takes you to come out of that fatigued state into recovery. Because not necessarily how hard you've worked out or what's going to trash you the most. It's how hard you can recover from that as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I've seen like a lot of people recently have been doing the Nordics, but actually coming back up from them. And I think I've only seen the Australian Haiti Boyle being able to do it, like actually going down and coming back up. I don't know if it comes from the Australian strength coach or Brett Contreras. I think Brett like really drops down and like pushes back with the hands. And I think the Australian strength coach, he like makes them go down and back up. But like there's probably 0.001% of the population that's able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you got to remember about glute ham raises, a Nordic. You've got to keep your hips in a fully extended position. You know, if you want to work your hamstrings fully, you need to keep your hips fully extended. You need to keep your core fully engaged. And actually, if you look at a lot of people doing them with, coming all the way down, then back up, they're actually throughout the entire time in more of an anteriorly tilted pelvis. They're basically sticking their ass out. So they're not in an ideal position as far as their hamstrings go anyway. And I'd consider it, they're able to do it, but they're not actually doing it as effectively as an exercise as they possibly could, really. But most of the benefits from a Nordic anyway come from the fact that it's an eccentric exercise. So if people are able to then lift themselves back up concentrically as well, then it's no longer an eccentric exercise.
Right.
They need to start overloading themselves eccentrically by adding some, I don't know, doing it with a medicine ball on the way down. The medicine ball down and then lifting themselves up and then repeating something like that. They need to overload the eccentric, and that's what a lot of the research says, that it's not necessarily the exercise itself, although it causes a lot of muscle activation in hamstrings. It's the fact that it's an eccentric hamstring exercise and how that affects hamstrings.
So would you so since it's a short, since it's a fast twitch muscle, do you think like on like 6 to 8 reps, if we keep it through that rep scheme, that maxing out on each single rep the eccentric of the movement would be beneficial? Like first rep as slow as possible, second rep as slow as possible, third rep as slow as possible, and obviously the time would be the shorter each time, but would that be the most beneficial, the best bang for your buck in your opinion?
Yeah. You could argue that the concentric isn't needed at all. You could just do the eccentric portion and then lift yourself up fully. I don't know about you, if I'm doing them, I'll control myself down as slow as I possibly can, and I will try to lift myself up a little bit because I don't like to lose the tension. But the benefits come from the actual eccentric of it. If you're doing 6 to 8 reps per set, I'd probably consider that slightly more on the high volume side of things anyway.
Really?
Just because it's an eccentric exercise, and you are causing a lot of tissue damage, a lot of micro trauma within that. So I wouldn't be doing much more than 6 to 8 and just kind of stick within that bracket.
So 4 to 6 would be the best choice, kind of.
Yeah. If I remember rightly, a lot of the studies used kind of 5-6 reps. And that's, they call it the sarcomere popping hypothesis. So basically what happens is when you're doing Nordic hamstring curls, let's say you're sprinting and you're most likely to injure your hamstring when your knees are fully flexed and knees are extended. So into kind of that late flight phase of when you're sprinting. So knees up, knees extended, and that's where your hamstring goes. Basically, what happens is that when you're doing the eccentrics, the length at which your hamstrings are strongest change, and this happens through something called the sarcomere popping hypothesis, and that's one mechanism they think why Nordic hamstring eccentrics are so good as injury prevention exercises, simply because they're changing the length in which your hamstrings are strongest at. They're stronger at a longer length than they previously were. And they've actually shown that in studies that have used a few sets of six reps, almost immediately showing that change in hamstring strength at a longer length, in theory, making you less likely to strain your hamstrings almost instantly. And I believe FIFA, International Football Federation, they actually put together like a pre-game warm-up, which they kind of put throughout the globe. And I think it actually included doing some Nordic hamstring eccentrics before a game. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that, but I kind of see the idea behind it.
Yeah, kind of just like wake them up a bit.
Yeah, kind of.
But I kind of like just by hearing you say that to do 5 to 6 reps of these, I was thinking that if you're actually doing 5 to 6 reps, you're probably doing at least 30 seconds of time under tension. So yeah, going over that would be counterproductive. You're right.
It's horrible. eight reps of a Nordic with 3-4 second eccentrics. Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be there. So the way I see it, if you get in 6 reps out of it and quite comfortably, and you're able to lower yourself quite comfortably in 3 to 4 seconds, well then you're ready to introduce a little bit of resistance to yourself. You know, holding a plate or something, doing it with a weighted vest on, something like that, to again, you know, make sure you're overloading the eccentric.
100%, I agree. I'll think differently about this now. Well, Garrett, thank you so much for doing this. I always ask my podcast guests 3 final questions. They're always the same. And yeah, I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here. So the first question is, if you would have what would be your theme song? So if you would get into a new room and people would see you, what's the song that pops in their head?
Oh, good question. Probably something stupid. Everyone knows me. Everyone, if I go to the gym, people always just refer to me as Maverick or Mav or something like that.
Yeah, why is that? Is that, that's your kind of your name or your brandish?
Yeah, years ago, basically, someone said that I was a fitness maverick. And then it just kind of stuck. And then only a few years later, I actually decided to start using it as kind of it kind of caught wind locally. And then I actually decided that I'd make a bit of an online kind of marketing thing out of it and just adopted it, really. So I wish I kind of had a cooler story than that about it, or that I had control over what I called myself, but someone else, be a fitness maverick, people started calling me it, therefore, you know, it kind of took off like that. But going back to the theme song thing, I think it'd be the theme song of Top Gun or something, because everyone knows me as Maverick, and I think Top Gun Maverick's coming out soon, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it out already?
It's not out here, but I know they've been playing some trailers. It looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll go with the Top Gun theme song.
Oh yeah, so that would be the song. So my second question is, if you would have a country of choice, so if you would have to move out of the UK and move somewhere else for the rest of your life, either to do the same thing that you're doing right now or something completely new, it could be somewhere you've never been, where would that be?
100% Australia. So I lived there for a year. I lived in Melbourne for a year, me and the girlfriend. Absolutely loved it. You know, I'd recommend, especially Melbourne, to, depends what you want, I suppose, but I just love that kind of the vibes of Melbourne. It was kind of half city, half beach kind of vibes. And it's just, Australia just feels like it's completely secluded from the rest of the world.
Really?
In a good and bad way.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to get things that you might take for granted. For example, if you want a certain brand of protein powder, I know this sounds like really bad first world problems, but if you want a brand of protein powder, you've probably got about 5 different brands to choose from. Whereas you and I can just go online and we can choose probably, you know, thousands of different brands, things like that. And that's just because they're kind of a bit out of the way. There aren't many companies there, or companies don't want to ship there. But then also that's a good thing, because you feel like you're completely secluded. You feel as though you're not kind of involved in the troubles of the world and things like that as well. And it's just kind of very, very chilled vibes, and everyone just kind of gets along a little bit, really. So, you know, if I could lift up my friends and family and move them there, then I would definitely move back. But unfortunately, they're here in the UK, and I love the UK, but yeah.
So you're mostly staying more in the UK for the family and friends.
Mostly, yeah. As I said, just it feels a lot. It's much easier living in the UK. When you live in Australia, you realize what you've got in the UK and kind of how easy life is.
Really?
Yeah, and how much access you have to a lot of things. You know, for example, as I was saying, just things online. If you want to purchase something, if you want to go down to a supermarket, etc., you can kind of get whatever you want. But then Australia, just for kind of, as I said, that chilled feeling, it's a lot more of an easy life. It's a lot more of kind of it's somewhere I think everyone would want to retire to, in a way.
And it's a nice fitness mecca. Like, exactly. Everybody looks fit over there.
Yeah, it's an outdoor life, really. Yeah, even when it's cold, it's not that cold. And it's just, you know, I was going for daily walks down to the beach with my headphones in, listening to a podcast, doing some work, etc. Whereas here, it's kind of, well, I walk to the park. It's not quite the same. Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I definitely need to get down there for sure.
Definitely, yeah.
I have a couple of friends in Adelaide over there. So, okay, I don't even know how to say that. Adelaide. My final question is, well, everybody on the podcast is going to know your age now. So, if you would have one piece of advice to give to a 10-year younger yourself, what would that be?
Oh, pretty good question. Be patient, I think. I think I wanted too much too soon, and I think I won't go into it because we probably don't have time for it, but I had quite a bit of success when I was younger. For example, 10 years ago when I was 20, I had the opportunity to write a book. That book has sold nearly 500,000 copies now.
Wow.
And my name's not even on the front cover of it. It's inside the back page. I basically got a one-off payment to write this book. And I basically got the opportunity because I knew someone, you know. I'm an open book, and I tell you exactly how things kind of happen. And it was a book I wrote about running and strength training for running. And as we spoke about, I'm definitely no running expert, but somehow, because I knew someone and I was perceived as a mini expert at that age, and because I was writing for other people, I was given an opportunity to write a book that's now sold a lot of copies. And then from that, that kind of set a level for me and a level of expectation. And I thought this was going to happen and that was going to happen, and I should be here by now, and I should be writing for these people and making this amount of money. And having a lot of focus on those types of things kind of actually caused me to take my eye off the ball of the stuff I should have really been doing, actually. And as I said, just being a lot more patient and kind of nailing the basics. You know, nowadays my job is mostly, you know, I write for a lot of big websites. You know, I create some content daily, and I don't expect an immediate return off of it. It's just whatever happens, you know. I'll say it now, I've just got another book deal, 10 years later. So I've just got another book deal with a really big publisher. I'm not allowed to say who yet or what the book's on, but this is going to be a 2-year project. So this is kind of something coming to fruition right now after another 10 years of work on top of that. So, you know, so just gotta be patient, really.
That sounds like a lot of maturity there.
yeah, which, you know, as a 40-year-old, I might look back at my 30-year-old and be saying the same thing, Gareth, you've got to be patient. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? I think that the older you get, the more you understand. And yeah, I think patience is a big one. And I think going back to the online personal training thing, I think that's why a lot of young trainers are doing it, because they're trying to make a lot of money fast, whereas they're not actually putting the time in where it needs to be put and just building up those foundations and building up their basic knowledge base and working with real clients in person, owning those skills. And then, you know, in a few years' time, sure, become an online personal trainer, but at least then you'll become a really good one.
And patience is going to be something that a lot of people's going to learn in these confinements of our next weeks, right?
You'd hope so. I don't know about you, but I've heard a lot of people just sat there watching Netflix and playing on their game stations and things. So whereas probably you and I, we're kind of upping the game a little bit and
spend
a little bit more time on content creation or something, because we can't work with the clients that we used to.
Well, man, thank you so much. This has been really great, and hope I'll get you back on, and maybe we could dig deep into more like a really in-depth training stuff and
less about the online and more about the actual nuts and bolts of training.
Yeah, for sure.
Good man.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. See you later.
See you later, man.